Hello and welcome to NewsHour from the BBC World Service. We're coming to you live from London. I'm Rob Young. More than 70% of the Earth's surface is covered in water, yet the United Nations is warning of an imminent risk of a water shortage. In a report issued at its first major summit on the issue for four decades, the UN says water scarcity is becoming prevalent because of overconsumption, pollution, and the effects of climate change. Here's the UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres.
Water is in deep trouble. We are draining humanity's lifeblood through vampiric overconsumption and unsustainable use, and evaporating it through global heating. We've broken the water cycle, destroyed ecosystems, and contaminated groundwater.
It's estimated the number of people in cities threatened by a lack of water will double by the middle of the century to about 2 billion people. Arij lives in the Sudanese capital, Khartoum, which is situated where the two branches of the Nile merge. And she told NewsHour that even the affluent parts of the city are not spared from water shortages.
Last month, we were surprised that we actually didn't have water for 11 days in the same neighborhood where I live, which is supposed to be like upper middle class neighborhood. But the south side of the neighborhood, they actually had contaminated water where the sewage water and the drinking water kind of like sort of merged. We had to actually buy water, drinking water from the supermarket and use it for everything. The infrastructure of this neighborhood hasn't been sort of upgraded since the 60s, and it's overpopulated now because it wasn't designed for this number of population.
Well, waterborne diseases are also a major problem, particularly in developing countries. More than 1,600 people have died from cholera in Malawi in southern Africa since last year. We heard on NewsHour last week from the BBC's Rhoda Odhiambo in the capital Lilongwe about the impact of cholera there.
Inside this particular tent, I can see a lot of women, men and also children. Most of the patients are severely ill. They've lost a lot of water. So what the doctors and the nurses are doing right now is ensuring that they get rehydrated.
Adam is looking after his sister who arrived yesterday. I ask him how he thinks she got cholera.
We have a very big problem of water in my area. I think it's the cause of this illness. We mostly drink unclean water.
Well, for an overview, I've been talking to Mariana Mazzucato, a professor at University College London and co-chair of the Global Commission on the Economics of Water. Her new report, Turning the Tide, A Call to Collective Action, was launched today at the UN 2023 Water Conference. So just how big is the water problem?
Well, it's very bad. There is over 2 billion people still without access to safely managed water. One child under 5 dies every 80 seconds from diseases caused by polluted water. And I could go on and give you all sorts of statistics, but the problem is that just puts us in negative mode. So this new report that we're launching today at the United Nations, where I'm sitting, tells us we can do better, you know.
And I want to get onto the solutions in just a moment. But before we do, what are the main causes then of these problems when it comes to water, particularly water shortages and dirty water?
Sure. I mean, well, one of the problem is that a lot of the modeling that's been done by the science that then has informed the policy has mainly focused on blue water. In other words, something like, basically all the fresh water on land. So, you know, rivers, lakes, and aquifers. But that's only 35% of all the water. The remaining 65% is what's called green water. And that's soil moisture and vapor flows. And that's actually what basically powers all biomass on Earth and regulates the balance of the entire water cycle. That has been given very little attention by the modeling. We have focused too much on the 35% of fresh water on land. And unless we also understand how countries and communities are absolutely interconnected through that global water cycle, then it's very hard to actually find the right solutions. So, for example, deforestation in the Congo Basin lowers rainfall in the neighboring countries and actually across the whole Atlantic and the Amazon. And there's different new modeling, which has shown this very strong interconnected problem, which then requires us to look at water as a common good.
And implicit in what you are you saying that there is enough water, there is enough drinking water around, it's just that it is mismanaged or it's in the wrong place?
Yes, absolutely. But also that we haven't really catalyzed the immense amount of innovations that could actually help solve the problems. So if we just look at problems in a static way, yes, there's a limited amount of water. But imagine if we actually really start to innovate and scale the solutions around storage systems for water, for example, by preserving natural ecosystems that basically account for the vast bulk of water storage. Second, we could reduce the huge amounts of leakages that we have in water delivery systems every day. Third, we look at agriculture, which is the biggest user of water today and hugely inefficient user. 80% of global wastewater is not adequately treated, while many regions suffer water scarcity. So we could actually be recycling that wastewater, which would, coming back to your question, actually increase the amount of water that we have. But that requires innovation and investment.
What you did not list in your answer there was desalination, using salty seawater, taking the salt out to make it drinkable.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, that's actually one of the areas that's talked about a lot. But, you know, that itself uses water. Just like, for example, if you look at electrification strategies globally, which is very good for the climate, that requires lithium-powered batteries. There's huge amounts of water which is used to extract lithium on the ground. And that's why we need a systems approach. In other words, if we just look at problems on their own in a siloed way, it could be that you're solving one problem, like electric vehicles, while you're creating another problem in another area around water. And that's why it's important today not to see the climate issue as separate from water. They're extremely linked.
But when it comes to sustaining human life, it does. There is surely an almost limitless amount of seawater, and therefore if that can be desalinated to make it into drinking water, that is surely part of the answer, perhaps a large part of the answer.
But it's important to look at it as a portfolio of different types of solutions as opposed to just, you know, putting all our eggs in one basket. And that requires looking at this again through an opportunity lens, not just, you know, a threat to mankind kind of lens. And that's why we also have to be structuring that investment in such a way that, for example, creates a just and inclusive system around the partnerships between the public and the private sectors, as opposed to what we have also looked at in terms of extractive water partnerships. So in England, where I live, the privatization of the water industry in 1989 caused a lot of leakages, not only of water, but of money from the system. So £72 billion have been allowed to leak from the industry in recent years just into dividend payouts and share buyback schemes.
So you're saying that private companies should not anywhere in the world be in charge of water systems?
It's not about private versus public. It's how do we actually govern a public-private partnership that has, you know, a goal at the end. We didn't get to the moon by NASA just saying, oh, hey, private sector, help us go up there. They actually had a very clear goal. It was driven by the public sector. They crowded in private sector investment in areas like nutrition, materials, electronics, and software. But the contracts between the public and the private sectors were very carefully designed. They had outcomes-oriented procurement. They had clauses in the contracts about no excess profits. But what does that mean in terms of no excess profits? That means that we actually have to have an idea of what a just distribution of the rewards of a system looks like, given that the risks are being socialized. We need to make sure that the rewards are also being socialized.
Professor Mariana Mazzucato.